passed through earlier, we'd begun to see signs of damage and destruction from whatever cataclysm had befallen the region. As we descended, we passed by several collapsed or completely blocked passageways, some of them appearing as if the entire bedrock had shifted just enough to send entire hallways off their original course and blocking them from access, while simultaneously cracking others below them wide open. Navigating through the ruined passages carefully, we slowly pressed onwards, until we had eventually reached a nearly identical copy of the chamber that we'd just left upstairs, complete with a floating ether crystal set in the center of it. Completely identical, except for the one tiny difference, that instead of glowing with a pale azure light like the crystal before it, this one instead emitted a sickly green one and had a palpable haze hanging over it. Curious to what may have caused the difference, we had all waltzed into the otherwise empty room, thinking that because we couldn't see any creatures standing around, that there weren't any to find. Unfortunately, that line of thinking only lasted for a few moments, just long enough for us all to approach the emerald-colored crystal and to be in prime position when a horde of angry Nefarian ghosts began pouring out from inside it, their angry mental howls filling our minds. The pitch of the voices changed with every word spoken, interchanging seamlessly between one another, with the rare word distorted almost beyond recognition.
Invaders! Kill the invaders! This is to us! Kill them! Kill them! Kill them!
A discordant shift in the chorus of voices caused me to slam back into the present, my train of thought interrupted by the mental noise. Redoubling my efforts to ignore the ghost's never-ending mental chant, I focused on stabbing Splinter into the sickly green aura that comprised an attacking shade's form, the magical blade putting an end to the spirit's undeath as it faded from existence, hopefully heading towards a more peaceful afterlife.
"There's no end to them!"
Constantine called out to me as he finally climbed back up to his feet and fell in beside me, both of his short swords slashing out at one of the three remaining shades.
"How the hell do we beat them all?"
"I have no idea,"
I replied, using Constantine's arrival as a brief reprieve to cast a glance behind me, noticing that Lazarus was slowly rising to his feet with his translucent sword in hand.
"But we need to get back to the rest of the group."
I turned away from the still rising half-giant and returned my attention back to the shades before me, seeing that we had managed to attract two newly spawned shades that had just emerged from the tainted ether crystal.
"Lazarus, we need to go. Can you move?"
"Ugh."
The man grunted what I hoped was an affirmative response, because no sooner did I hear his reply than I lunged forward at the two shades loosely arrayed before me, accepting a grazing slash from each of their spectral claws in exchange for cleaving Splinter through both of their stomachs. Reacting as if they were still creatures of flesh and blood, the two shades howled in pain and reflexively clutched at their abdomens, which now trailed a stream of ectoplasm as the energy that bound them together gushed from the open wound. With both of their clawed hands no longer threatening me, it only took me a heartbeat to reverse Splinter's momentum, slicing the blade through their now unprotected heads and putting an end to the two undead creatures. Not waiting to see if Constantine had dealt with his own shade, I immediately took off at a run, angling myself in a sprint across the chamber, looking to circle around the tainted ether crystal and rejoin the rest of the party. As I ran, six more shades emerged from the crystal, their ghostly bodies falling to the ground soundlessly before slowly scrambling to their feet. Individually, or even in small groups, the lower-leveled shades were nearly effortless to kill, as evidenced by how easily I'd managed to kill three of them, suffering only a small wound from my efforts. It wasn't until their numbers grew, however, that they became dangerous, their ghostly bodies allowing them to stack on top of one another in a way that no physical creature could ever hope to mimic, forcing you to defend against a dozen ethereal claws all coming from the same direction at once.
"There's an unstable one in that pack!"
Lazarus's voice boomed from just behind my shoulder, causing my heart to leap in my chest as I glanced back towards the crystal, my eyes landing on an all-too-familiar shifting form.
"We won't make it far unless
I'll take care of it,"
I shouted back to the man, angling my desperate sprint across the room directly towards the tainted ether crystal.
"You guys keep running. I'll catch up with you on the other side. Clear?"
I heard Constantine begin to call from behind me as I shifted directions and immediately cut him off.
"Go, Constantine,"
I barked, putting any further replies out of my mind as I rushed towards the six still rising shades. My attention focused solely on the one shade that was roiling with azure light, the magical energy dancing across the emerald ectoplasm that was its body. We had learned early in the battle that any of these multicolored shades with an unstable prefix attached to their name were substantially more dangerous than their more common variant. Namely, by having the ability to explode with extreme force after rushing into near point-blank range and sending everyone around them flying through the air and crashing to the ground, allowing the rest of the shades to quickly swarm any prone victims. Which hopefully I can keep from happening. Again. I thought while gritting my teeth and speeding up into a sprint. It was because of the unstable shades that Constantine, Lazarus, and I had managed to get ourselves separated from the rest of the party in the first place, the three of us having been caught on the wrong side of the crystal when the encounter had first begun, and then forced to keep moving in order to avoid the seemingly never-ending stream of shades emerging from the strangely colored ether crystal. If I can try and trigger the unstable shade early and try to get out of its way before it can explode... I put on one last burst of speed as the distance between me and the shades vanished, throwing myself forward directly into the middle of them as I entered melee range, sweeping Splinter in the wildest arc that I could manage. The ether-touched blade sang through the air harmlessly as the three shades centering the line before me reflexively leaped away from my attack, some spark of self-preservation having stuck with the creatures, despite their now undead state. Just how I'd hoped they would. Maintaining my sprint, I sped past the cluster of shades, taking advantage of the opening, and passed through the gap between their ranks. My eyes focused on the unstable shade standing just behind the trio. I had just enough time to see the multicolored shade begin to raise its claw to strike me before I drove Splinter's point directly into its chest, discharging the shocking touch that I'd stored in the weapon into the spirit's body. There was a slight pause as the ghost shuddered from the after effects of my spell, giving me the chance to pull my blade free and take a step past it, before its allies all spun around and attacked me from behind. Recovering slowly from my attack, the shade spun to follow me, swinging a claw wildly in my direction and earning a savage cut along its forearm for its efforts, as I brought Splinter up just in time to block it. Snarling from the combined attacks, the unstable shade's body immediately began to glow with bright azure light. I think that's my cue, I thought, as I dodged a second swipe from the shade's other claw and slashed a shallow cut into its shoulder, the wound causing the light emanating from it to intensify. Time to get out of here! Disengaging from the fight before the now brightly glowing shade could work itself up into a frenzy, I spun on my heel and rushed around the raised dais of the ether crystal looming over us, before triggering Blink Step. My vision blurred into a familiar kaleidoscope of colors as I teleported across the room, rematerializing mid-stride just as a blinding flash of azure light filled the air behind me, followed closely by a thunderclap of magic. "Lear!" Constantine's voice rang out from much closer than I'd expected, causing me to flinch in surprise as I turned my head towards its source, spotting both the rogue and Lazarus angling towards me, the pair having made great time circling around the ether crystal. "You made it!" "Barely," I exclaimed, feeling the sting of a wound I never remembered taking flare up on my back. "We're not through yet," Lazarus grunted, breathing hard as the three of us fell into line with one another. "The others are getting swarmed, look!" Taking my eyes off the pair, I snapped my head in the direction that I assumed the rest of the party to be, immediately seeing what Lazarus was referring to. In the time that the three of us had been separated from the group, they had been forced back into a corner of the room as a veritable horde of shades had descended upon them, stacking atop themselves in a sea of emerald light, their ethereal forms allowing several of them to occupy the same space at once. Standing at the front of the group, I saw the bloodied and exhausted forms of both Amaranth and Drace, doing their best to keep the enraged spirits at bay as a never-ending avalanche of claws continuously swept out from the mass before them. "Shit!" I spat as we all adjusted our approach to hit the shades from behind. "Anyone have a plan how to handle this?" "We don't need a plan," Lazarus barked harshly, anger boiling in his voice as he shouted. "Just follow me!" Putting on an extra burst of speed, the enraged half-giant pulled away from both Constantine and me, his long legs pumping wildly as he charged the distracted shades from behind. With a mighty cleave of his greatsword, Lazarus carved through a pile of the Nefarian spirits clustered before Drace, turning the shade's near overpowering strength in numbers into a fatal weakness, as the blade passed through several of them that had been all caught occupying the same spot at once. With Lazarus's one attack, the pace of the battle shifted as a gap opened up in the shade's ranks, many of them shifting around in surprise to see what had attacked them from behind, just in time for Constantine and me to arrive. Taking up position on either side of Lazarus, the two of us set about attacking the small army of shades, scything through the mass as they all scrambled to meet our attack. only to have the rest of our party slam into him from the other side.
Take the shield down!
Dre shouted, a thundering clap of magic filling the air, a heartbeat afterward, as a burst of ether fire from Halcyon's pyroclap rolled over a cluster of shades, followed by a constant stream of fire from Caius's skull-tipped staff.
Hit them with everything we have before more spawn!
Caught between the two forces, the shades melted under our combined onslaught as we all surged forward, capitalizing on the ghosts' tightly packed ranks, each one of our attacks hitting several of them at once. But yet for all of our success, the sheer quantity of shades meant that wounds were inevitable.
Ugh!
I cursed mentally, unable to move my arm in time to prevent a spectral claw from running itself across my arm, the ethereal nails passing through my armor as if it were non-existent and slicing through the flesh underneath. In retaliation, I reflexively thrust Splinter into the body that the claw was attached to, as well as to at least two others that happened to occupy the same space at the moment. Feeling no resistance to my attack save for the cool flow of mana up my arm as I triggered my mana leech ability, I then twisted the blade sideways before sweeping it out of the several shades' bodies, watching a spray of ectoplasm fill the air. Over the next few minutes, the battle gradually shifted until the bulk of the shades that had once threatened the party had been cleared out, allowing Constantine, Lazarus, and I to finally fall into our proper places, forming a solid line of battle and giving the ranged members of the party the space and time they needed to pick off any unstable shades at a distance.
If anyone has any bright ideas for putting an end to this fight, feel free to speak up,
Alistair shouted in an uncharacteristic display of anger and frustration.
Because I'm almost out of mana, and I'm not going to be able to heal you guys anymore.
Same here,
Halcyon shouted.
I'm running on fumes.
Try to destroy the crystal from range,
Lazarus offered through the chaos of battle.
We tried that already, Sierra replied immediately. It just absorbed any spells directed at it, and my arrows just bounce off it harmlessly.
Then we'll have to break up close,
Lazarus shot back.
Hang on. Breaking it could cause the crystal to explode,
Caius stated urgently.
All the ether stored inside it is going to have to go somewhere.
All I'm hearing are problems, Trace snarled. Does anyone have a solution?
What about that fancy box with the crystals over there?
Constantine called out.
It looks exactly like the one we saw upstairs.
Right, the security system thing,
I exclaimed, my eyes shifting to the wall closest to us and seeing a familiar-looking rectangular pillar set into the side of it a short distance away from us. Eyes widening, I tried to make mental contact with the device but didn't get any reply.
I see the box, but I don't think I'm close enough to activate it.
Then we need to move before we get swarmed again.
Trace stated, the big man swinging his heavy mace through a cluster of shades before him and taking a large step forward.
Everyone on my tail, now!
Not waiting for a reply from any of us, Trace then went on to blaze a path through the gradually thickening wall of shades that had steadily continued to pour from the ether crystal, these newly spawned spirits quickly replacing the batch that we'd killed just moments earlier. Unless we found a way to stop the crystal from spawning any more of them, it was only a matter of time before Alistair ran out of mana and exhaustion took its toll on us, allowing the shades to slowly wear us down, or for a handful of the unstable shades to get close enough to disrupt our ranks.
Hopefully this ancient Nefarian computer thing or whatever it is can help us before that happens,
I thought desperately, as I worked to keep pace with the Drace and the other melee fighters, slashing and stabbing at every shade that came into range, moving with purpose through the thinned ranks of shades. It didn't take us long to cut our way through them, until we reached the pillar and formed a protective circle around it.
You're up, Lear,
Drace shouted as we all stopped moving.
I don't care what you have to do, but get that thing to turn this crystal off.
I'm on it,
I answered, having switched places with Lazarus in our traditional line of battle and placed myself directly along the wall that the device was on, reducing my defensive responsibilities in case I needed to divide my attention. Crossing my fingers, I mentally reached out to the pillar once again, silently hoping that it would reply to me now that we had gotten closer.
Hey, we need help,
I sent, far too caught up in the rush of battle not to be blunt with the machine.
We're getting swarmed here.
There was no answer from the device for several seconds, the delay lasting long enough for me to begin to think that a reply wouldn't be forthcoming. But just as I was about to turn to inspect the crystals protruding from the pillar, a distorted voice filled my mind.
Mind print recognized. Welcome, Lyria Rassler.
It intoned calmly at first, oblivious to the battle that was raging around it.
before. Warning, multiple ethereal anomalies detected nearby. Request status update on containment process.
Failing?
I mentally shouted at the machine as several shades wandered into my defensive sphere, forcing me to slash out at them with splinter.
The ether crystal in this chamber is different. It's contaminated somehow. Spirits of the dead are emerging from it and trying to kill us.
Checking statement.
The Nefarian intelligence replied as it paused for several seconds, giving me a chance to look in the direction of the crystal and see another pack of shades emerge free from it.
Error. Display matrix is non-functional. Cannot verify statement. Engaging troubleshooting mode. Please describe the nature of the contamination.
Is this thing serious right now?
I thought to myself, unable to believe what I was hearing.
I need to deal with a Nefarian equivalent of tech support right in the middle of a battle?
The ether crystal is glowing with a pale green light, and hordes of deceased Nefarian spirits are emerging from it, believing that we are attempting to invade the place. I practically shouted at the machine, hoping that my mental volume conveyed just how serious the situation was.
We have killed scores of them, but they keep coming.
Processing statement.
The Nefarian device answered, completely unperturbed by the anger in my tone.
Query. Are the ether transmogrification rings of the ether matrix enveloped within a spectral or flesh-based protuberance?
I have no idea what that even means!
I mentally screamed back at the device as the realization that we were all going to die began to sink in.
Clarification. Have the metallic rings encircling the ether matrix grown arms?
It asked, still retaining a calm and collected voice.
That can fucking happen?
I exclaimed, just as a blast from an unstable shade that had managed to get too close to the line knocked me off balance and forced me to catch myself against the wall. Pushing myself back upright, I glanced towards the tainted ether crystal and didn't see anything surrounding the metallic rings that gently spun around it.
No! It doesn't have any arms at all!
Noted. There are no further queries at this time. Please hold while diagnostics are performed,
the voice said before falling silent.
How's it coming, Lyrian?
Dre shouted from the front of the line.
This is starting to get too much to handle!
It put me on goddamned hold is how it's going!
I snapped back at the warrior.
We need to wait until it's done!
Are you serious?
The half-giant roared, disbelief in his voice.
Why the hell would I lie about something like that?
I retorted, the stress of the situation finally getting to me.
Whatever, but it better not be too long!
Alistair added with a desperate note to his voice.
Because I'm officially out of mana now! Everyone's on their own!
Rawr!
Drace growled in response, which was shortly followed by a loud clap of magic as a distant, unstable shade detonated. Turning my attention back to the battle at hand, I couldn't help but notice that the sheer quantity of shades pouring free from the ether crystal had steadily managed to increase, with more and more of the undead spirits filling the chamber. Fighting side by side with Amaranth, my world shrank as the two of us worked to keep our portion of the defense pocket intact, countless minor wounds piling up from the sheer quantity of shades that surrounded us.
Diagnostic complete.
The device finally announced after what seemed like a lifetime, but in reality it had been less than half a minute.
Situation is deemed to be a Class 5 spectral infestation centering on the chamber's ether matrix. Recommendation. Activate purge mechanism to drain ether from infected ether matrix.
Great!
I replied, feeling as if a single ray of hope had appeared.
How do I activate the purge mechanism?
A purge can be activated by the express command of those ranked supervisor or higher, including any members listed on a containment team.
The mental voice explained patiently.
I'm the containment team leader!
I told the Nefarian machine, feeling a wave of frustration surge through me that I had to repeat myself.
Purge the ether matrix in this chamber immediately!
Command received.
The device replied,
checking authorization. Success. Executing command. Stand by.
Something is happening,
Drace announced, just as the light emanating from the ether crystal started to dim.
The energy around the crystal is fading!
I activated some sort of purge mechanism,
I replied, noticing that the Nefarian spirits before me seemed to be growing more and more indistinct with every second that passed.
It looks like it's affecting the shades, too.
About time,
Lazarus exclaimed from somewhere behind me, his voice sounding completely exhausted beyond measure.
I don't know how much I have left in me.
Just a little bit longer,
I affirmed, slicing splinter through the rapidly fading form of a shade as the chamber steadily grew darker, the mental voices from the spirits also beginning to diminish in volume. In the seconds that followed, both the chamber and the shades continued to darken before they both finally winked out as if snuffed by an invisible hand, sending the chamber into pitch-black darkness and silence. Several more seconds passed before a few orbs of light flared into existence, conjured with the final dregs of Halcyon's and Caius's mana. Letting Splinter's edge drop down, I looked in the direction of the now dark ether crystal and saw that the tainted energy that once surrounded it had completely faded. Breathing a sigh of relief, I let my body relax, hearing the Nefarian device voice filter into my head.
Report. Ether purge complete. Spectral infestation deemed neutralized.
Chapter 37.
So, does anyone else think it's weird that all the Nefarian ghosts and spirits we've come across think that we're invading the place? But this security system thing which Lear's talking to wants us to kill them all anyway?
Constantine asked out loud as we all recovered from the fight and waited for our spellcasters to finish regenerating their mana, after they had each graciously allowed me to mana drain them to top my own reserves.
I mean, that just sounds kind of wrong to me. Shouldn't the security system be on their side?
If they were still alive, it probably would be, I replied with a shrug, and continued scratching Amaranth's head, the big cat having practically sat on my feet in demand for attention. But based on what I've noticed so far from the security system, and from what happened when we unfroze all the spiders back at the other ruin, it seems that the Nefar made sure to have protocols in place when an ethereal anomaly occurs.
Clearly for a good reason, Sierra stated. Look at what happened when a handful of spiders managed to get to the ley line. If we weren't here to stop the infestation before it got worse, this entire region would have been overrun.
It would have at least been enjoyable to hunt the many legs,
Amaranth told me mentally, clearly paying attention to the conversation.
These spirits that we have faced recently give no satisfaction to the kill. They merely fade away into nothing.
Hopefully we won't come across any other spirits, I told my familiar, somewhat understanding where he was coming from. From his point of view, the ghosts that we had been fighting were completely outside his realm of experience and nothing like the typical prey that he hunted. But I honestly don't know what else to expect down here.
I guess,
Constantine said, his face shifting to a thoughtful expression, then looking towards me.
Has he given you any more problems about your ether warping since the first room, Lear?
No, nothing, I replied, shaking my head at the rogue. I have no idea how the Nefar set up this system, or if it has been damaged along with the ruin, but during an emergency the containment teams seem to be able to do or access anything, even self-approve their own access, which seems like bad security design.
I'm not so sure about that, Lear, Sierra stated. Given how fast all this ether stuff can get out of hand, I think reaction speed over security is more important.
That is a good point, I agreed.
It's also likely that they didn't just put anyone on a containment team,
Halcyon offered, joining the conversation.
I mean, what did they say this whole thing was, Lear? A spectral infestation? They wouldn't just send regular people after that. It'd likely be a specialized team of some sort.
That's true, too, I replied with a nod, unable to help myself from looking at the now dormant ether crystal, or how the security system referred to it as the ether matrix. The system said it was a Class 5 spectral infestation.
Which leads me to believe that there are at least four other classifications to how badly this could have gone for us, Lazarus said pessimistically.
The system did ask me if the crystal had grown arms, I noted, agreeing with the half-giant statement.
Wait, I thought you were joking when you said that.
Kai's head whipped around to look at me with concern.
Please tell me you're joking.
Does this look like my joking face? I asked the warlock while pointing to the serious expression I was wearing.
It asked if the arms were made out of flesh or were spiritual in nature. There was a moment of silence as everyone absorbed that mental picture, several heads turning towards the crystal.
Well, just when you think you've run out of nightmare fuel, the game just finds a way to top you up again.
Halcyon exclaimed, his voice projecting a false, shaky confidence.
If that ever happens to us, I'm giving you all fair warning now. I'm just gonna log off.
Not if you want any loot, you won't, Sierra said, looking pointedly at the mage.
Bah! What loot?
Halcyon grunted, waving his hands dramatically around the empty chamber.
These shades didn't drop anything for us at all. To be honest, I feel a bit cheated.
We've already gotten a pretty big haul from this dungeon already, I said, motioning towards the new gear that Constantine, Drace, and Alistair had managed to get from the last fight. Plus, if you look at it this way, we've also secured a completely intact and unpowered ether crystal. Halcyon snorted dismissively.
With any luck, it'll still be full of ghosts the moment that we power it up.
Maybe. But that also sounds like a problem for the future, I replied, using what had to be my favorite phrase. Anyway, how are you guys doing on mana? Shall I tell the security system thing to open the next set of doors for us?
I'm ready,
Alistair announced, followed a heartbeat later by Caius saying the same.
Yeah, I'm good,
Halcyon said with a sigh, waving a hand at the crystal-filled pillar.
Do your thing.
Nodding at the group, Amaranth and I both turned to walk over towards the console, with me mentally reaching out towards it the moment that I came into range. We're ready to keep moving, I told the security system. Can you unlock the next door?
Affirmative.
It stated, a grinding noise filling the air as the door at the far end of the chamber began to slide open.
Warning, detection apparatus beyond this chamber is non-operational. Cannot confirm presence of ethereal anomalies. Report. Based on last verifiable data, a Sentinel-class security unit was activated to safeguard the local ether matrices. Contact with the security unit was lost. 550 years, 5 months, 2 weeks, 9 hours, 8 minutes, 22 seconds ago. Recommendation, proceed with caution.
A security unit? I thought to myself in surprise. Once again doing the mental math and calculating that it had managed to survive for over 5 months down here before it too had lost contact. But did it lose contact because it broke, or because something managed to overwhelm it? What can you tell me about the security unit? I decided to ask the device, hoping it had a bit more information for me.
Report. The unit was a standard Sentinel-class model, designed for in-close defense and assault. Its primary function was to protect any nearby ether matrices, or serve as a backup to local containment teams.
The security system replied without any hesitation. Do you know what happened to cause the unit to lose contact? I asked, starting to wonder just how often these ethereal anomalies occurred, if the Nefar had security units on hand to deal with them.
Unknown,
the system answered.
The last recorded contact with the unit was when it was pursuing a high-threat class ethereal anomaly, as per its last standing orders. Contact with the unit was suddenly lost during the engagement that followed. It is theorized that the unit was either destroyed or suffered enough damage to no longer be able to communicate.
Hold on, I told the system, my eyes widening as I considered the implications of what it just said. If the Sentinel unit is still active, will it perceive us as a threat?
Negative, the voice replied. The security unit has full mental imprints of all facility and containment team members to avoid friendly fire incidents.
Even us? Who were just added to the list? I prompted to the device, wondering if it could come to the same conclusion I had.
Processing statement.
The mental voice intoned before falling silent for several seconds as it considered my question.
Warning, if Sentinel unit is still active, newly updated containment teams will not have been uploaded into its memory core. Probably of unit regarding you as hostile is to be considered 100% recommendation. Disable and dismantle Sentinel unit until memory core can be updated.
You better believe we're gonna dismantle it, I muttered as I moved away from the crystal-filled pillar and turned to face the group, several of them already staring in my direction, clearly curious as to why I'd been talking to the security system for so long. Everything okay, Lear? Sierra asked, having raised an eyebrow after hearing my words. What are we dismantling now? Possibly a security unit. Whatever that exactly is, I said with a sigh. Assuming it's still active, which I'll bet any money that it is.
You've lost me here, Lear, the red-haired elf replied, her expression shifting to confusion.
What security unit?
Is it the system that you're talking to?
No, not that one, I said with another even deeper sigh as I ran a hand through my hair, then began to repeat what I'd learned from the security system. So based on all that, I'm thinking that we either have a damaged security unit of some sort ahead of us,
or something that was strong enough to destroy it.
Lazarus finished, nodding along with my explanation.
Or maybe even both of those things, depending on how things shook out 500 years ago.
Damn, I didn't think of that, I said, definitely not wanting to fight two powerful creatures at once.
Is anyone else finding it hard to think on that sort of timescale? Constantine asked. I mean, it's been so long. Maybe this sentinel thing managed to kill whatever was chasing and just broke down afterward. It's been over 5 centuries since this all happened, after all.
I think that's wishful thinking, Constantine. We haven't found a single thing that's broken down here, Caius replied to the rogue while indicating the ether crystal. The Nefar built things to last.
I'm trying hard to be optimistic here, Caius, Constantine said, putting both his hands behind the back of his head and taking a deep breath. But you're making that really difficult right now.
There's a time for optimism and a time for realism, Constantine, Sierra stated. Right now, based on what we know, we need to prepare for the worst.
I'm sure we'll be able to manage, I said, meeting everyone's gaze as I spoke. It hasn't been exactly easy, but we've made it this far. I'm sure we can take it the rest of the way.
We'll see,
Trace replied wistfully, before motioning towards the crystal pillar with his chin. I don't suppose that box can tell you how Frey and the others are doing? I'd feel a hell of a lot more confident if we could join up with them again.
It should be able to, I said, sending a thought towards the security system. Where is the other containment team right now?
Report. The other containment team was last detected leaving the ether matrix opposite to this one approximately 6 minutes and 22 seconds ago. Detection apparatus beyond that point is non-operational.
The mental voice answered promptly.
According to the system, they're about 6 minutes ahead of us, I replied to the warrior while mentally picturing a map of the magical energy sources we'd seen through the ether scope. Based on our exploration so far, it seemed that each and every major source of energy that we had detected corresponded with the rough location of an ether crystal, which meant that there was only one more set of ether crystals ahead of us, plus whatever else that was lying in wait.
Then we better get moving,
the half-giant stated, turning away from the group and waving for everyone to follow him as he headed towards the now open door at the far side of the chamber.
No telling what the damage is going to be like, and I'd rather not leave the other group hanging if they end up needing our help somehow.
With those words, we all left the darkened chamber behind us and filed through the doorway, Drace setting a demanding pace in the hope of catching up with the other group. Much like the previous route we'd taken between the two ether matrices, there was plenty of damage evident in the passageway, with large cracks running through the walls and countless fragments broken off from the ceiling above, now littering the ground. The further that we walked, the more confident I became that the entire hallway itself seemed to be somehow off-center, as if it had not only sunken downwards from its original path, but it also twisted slightly, causing our balance to be shifted almost imperceptibly to one side.
The musk is growing thicker here,
Amaranth told me as we continued down the passageway.
The air is heavier as well.
Is it? I asked my familiar, taking a deep breath and noticing that the vague, moldy scent that filled the air had indeed grown more noticeable, while also increasing in humidity. You're right. I can smell it now, too. I wonder what it's coming from.
I am not certain,
Amaranth replied, his ear flicking as he spoke.
Perhaps there is stale water trapped down here.
Maybe, I acknowledged, a little surprised at my familiar's insight. There was much about the world that he simply didn't have a frame of reference for, yet it was becoming clear to me that the cat was much smarter than I'd originally given him credit for. Something to consider going forward, I guess, I thought, making a mental note not to hold anything back from Amaranth. I didn't want to inadvertently stunt the development of his personality by treating him as if he were less intelligent than he truly was.
Hold up!
Trey suddenly announced, pulling me out of my thoughts as he came to an abrupt stop, squinting at something further along the passageway.
Something doesn't look right up ahead.
Trouble? I asked, reflexively gripping Splinter's hilt tightly in my hand as I waited for an answer.
I don't think so.
The half-giant replied, edging forward with careful steps, the orb of light that hovered around him gradually illuminating the pitch-black hallway as he advanced.
The passageway looks like it just ends ahead of us here.
What do you mean, ends? Constantine's voice filtered up from behind me. It's collapsed?
No,
Trace called back, turning back towards us and beckoning us forward, his voice having shifted to amazement.
Not collapsed, but opening up into whatever this place is, was!
Curious to what he had found, I moved to catch up to Drace, seeing what had caught his attention in the first place. As I moved forward, the floor of the passageway gradually became blackened rubble, cracked and loose beneath my feet, with a wall on my right side giving way into complete darkness.
Whoa!
I gasped as I looked out into the pitch black that now surrounded me, then back towards Drace, seeing that the man had continued forward, stepping out onto what had to be a truly massive pile of stone as it continued downwards and out of sight.
Whoa, indeed,
Drace agreed, motioning me forward towards him as the rest of the party caught up and stared out into the abyss around us.
It's a tunnel.
Caius was the first to announce, his dark elven ancestry allowing him to see as clearly as if it were day.
A really, really big tunnel.
But for what?
Constantine asked. No one had an answer for the rogue as Caius and Halcyon wordlessly conjured several more orbs of light and began sending them out to illuminate the area, bits and pieces of the tunnel slowly becoming more and more visible. While the two mages ensured that those without enhanced vision could see, I decided to activate True Sight, the darkness around us vanishing as the magical enchantment took over. Looking around the chamber, the first thing that my mind processed was the sheer size of the tunnel, which at my best guess measured at least 50 feet in each direction. I couldn't even begin to imagine the amount of work that would have gone into excavating the space, and once again was in awe of the technology the Nefar must have possessed. This place must have been ancient even before it was destroyed, I theorized as I scanned my surroundings, seeing that there was a large collapse in the tunnel leading backward the way that we came. This would have taken ages to plan and build?
This place looks wrecked,
Halcyon said as he and Caius finished their conjuring, his voice vanishing out into the tunnel around us.
This tunnel almost looks exactly like what we saw in the room with the first ether crystal. The walls here are all burnt and shattered, just on a much larger scale.
I'll say, I agreed, finishing my initial observation of the area, making a note of the damage that Halcyon had pointed out. It seemed like every spare inch of the walls around us had either been vitrified and taken on a glassy sheen, or it had shattered and broken off completely, now a part of one of the many piles of stone that littered the area. I think either something happened further down the tunnel and the blast carried up this far, or the Nefar somehow moved ether through this tunnel and it erupted. That would explain all the damage we've seen.
Honestly, it's anyone's guess at this point,
Halcyon replied.
I wouldn't even know where to begin to piece together how this all happened.
And I don't think we ever will, I nodded with a sigh, looking out at the collapse that had blocked the tunnel behind us, silently wondering how far it traced back to the path that we'd already traveled. Turning around to face Drace, I noticed that he had kept himself busy while the rest of us had been caught glancing around the chamber, the man having taken several steps out onto the rubble that was piled against our side of the tunnel wall.
See anything interesting out that way, Drace?
The half-giant grunted. The remnants of the passageway we were just walking in from the looks of it. Looks like the whole chunk of stone it was carved out of shifted into the tunnel, then cracked and splintered off.
Damn, I replied, looking around the area for a way forward and seeing that our only other option was to slide straight down the rubble before us and then try climbing up another pile.
Can we keep going that way at all?
Don't hold it against me if I'm wrong,
Drace answered a little hesitantly.
Yeah, if we hug the wall, we should be at least able to get to the next major pile of rubble I can see from here.
And where do we go from there? Sierra asked, clearly not enthused with the man's lack of confidence.
Forward?
Drace proposed, his shoulders moving in a large shrug.
I don't see any better options available to us. It's not like we passed another route behind us.
He's right, Sierra, I said, waving a hand down at what I knew would be pitch-black darkness to her. The only option I see is trying to slide down into all the rubble that's fallen down here and try to pick our way through it.
Hard pass on that,
she replied, exhaling sharply as she did so, Then let's keep moving, I said, waving for everyone to follow me as I moved to catch up to Drace and resume our journey through the ruins. Keeping close to the wall, we fell back into our usual formation, carefully following the broken remains of the passageway before crossing over onto the large pile of shattered stone that Drace had mentioned earlier, and continuing onwards through the partially collapsed tunnel. Traveling across the rubble in search of a route forward, we followed it nearly the entire width of the tunnel before coming across a large fragment of the far wall that had broken off and formed a makeshift bridge, connecting to yet another mountain of rubble ahead of us. Making sure to test that the precariously balanced stone slab would be able to bear our weight before crossing, we cautiously continued forward, the sound of our crunching boots the only noise filling the chamber. Glancing around with my enhanced vision as we moved, I noticed that the further that we traveled, the thicker and denser the debris that filled the tunnel became. The damage looks worse this way, I thought, as I looked around the chamber with my enhanced vision, now leading the party across the sea of broken stone, having offered to take over for Drace since I could see near perfectly in the dark. Pausing for a moment to pick a better route, I noticed the fragmented remains of several passageways had been exposed and torn free when the walls had collapsed, silently wondering if we could find one intact enough to climb into and leave the tunnel behind. It's almost as if something huge exploded in here and shattered a good portion of it, exposing all the passages and rooms that were built alongside.
This place is endless,
Constantine grumbled as I led the party across a massive chunk of stone that had fallen from the ceiling above, somehow managing to remain in one piece when it landed.
We've traveled less distance than you think, Lazarus said to the rogue. We're crossing from one side of the tunnel to the other more often than not. I'd be surprised if we've moved more than 100 feet forward.
Ugh!
The rogue grunted dramatically.
If there's a dead end at the end of this, I'm just going to throw myself into the abyss rather than backtrack the way we just came.
If you did that, then you'd have to come back down here and get your soul fragment anyway, Lazarus pointed out.
Oh, right,
Constantine replied dejectedly.
I'll get Drace to carry me, then.
To the edge of the ledge, before tossing you off?
The warrior asked, clearly enthused by the idea.
Well, I'm on board for that. In fact, I can do that right now, if you like. I'm sure I can get you some great air time before you fall onto all those sharp and pointy rocks down there.
Hey, Lear, need some help up the front there?
Constantine's mood suddenly changed as several rushed footsteps echoed out from behind me.
I think I'm doing okay, actually,
I said with a smile, looking back towards the group and seeing Constantine rushing forward to catch up with me.
Okay, no problem,
Constantine replied, glancing behind him nervously, the motion causing a laugh from both Drace and Lazarus to filter forward.
I'm going to be right here, though, if you need anything.
Sure, I said with a chuckle as I turned my attention back towards the path ahead of me. Seeing that the large stone piece that we were currently walking on took us very close to the wall, which had what appeared to be a large chunk missing from it. Angling our approach to investigate the damage, I hoped that I would find another stable platform of some sort that we could drop down onto and keep moving forward. What I found, however, was something immeasurably better.
There's a fissure in the wall that looks like it leads down,
I told the group, having taken one glance at the site below, then turned around to fill everyone in.
We have about a 10-foot drop downwards onto what I assume used to be a hallway, which we can use to get closer to the hole. I can't quite make out what's inside it from this angle, but it definitely looks like it goes somewhere.
Well, I'm ready to get out of this tunnel, Constantine said enthusiastically. Let's go!
Hang on, Sierra stated, moving towards the rest of the area. Do we have any other options before we throw ourselves into a hole? Climbing back up is always a pain, or may simply not be possible.
Pretty much all our options are to go down at this point, I replied, stepping sideways to look out into the tunnel and motioning towards a very large collapse that had blocked the entire left side of the chamber ahead of us.
Realizing halfway through the gesture that Caius and Lazarus were the only party members that had the ability to see in the dark.
The entire left side of the tunnel is completely caved in, I explained, recovering from my mistake.
We'd have to drop down to the hallway below us anyway. Then find a way to drop down even further before circling around all the fallen debris, assuming we could at all.
So basically, our choice boils down to jump down blindly into a hole that could be a dead end, or jump down blindly into a sharp pile of rocks,
Drace summarized.
Pretty much, I agreed. Though to be fair, whatever is on the other end of the hole could also be filled with sharp rocks.
A risk I'm willing to let you take for me, Sierra replied, letting a smile creep across her face as she looked around to the group.
All in favor of Lyrian jumping into the hole first?
Aye!
The party echoed without missing a beat, including Amaranth's belated mental voice.
Aye!
Everyone else I get, but why you? I looked at the cat, puzzled at how quickly this had turned from me finding a route out of the tunnel to everyone deciding I should be the first one down it.
In order to bond fully with the pack, I must be seen as siding with them on occasion,
Amaranth replied.
That, and even a blind kitten knows not to leap where they cannot see the ground.
Traitors! All of you! I announced with a grimace, hearing everyone laugh as I turned away from the group and began to move towards the edge. Let's get this over with. Chapter 38
Lear!
Sierra exclaimed as she limped across the room angrily, her eyes staring daggers into mine.
You said there was just a short drop with nothing to worry about. I nearly broke both my ankles landing.
Actually, I think Lyrian added, if you're careful, to the end of that sentence. Constantine chimed in with a chuckle.
Besides, Amaranth and I landed fine.
Only because Amaranth is a giant fucking cat.
Halcyon seethed through his teeth as he sat on the ground, clutching at one of his shins.
And you have a skill that specifically reduces falling damage.
Psh, even without acrobatics, I would have been fine with that landing. Right, Lear?
Constantine asked, looking over towards me with a wide smile.
It wasn't so bad.
Not at all. I replied to the rogue stoically as I leaned heavily against the wall with a bored expression on my face, doing my best to hide the fact that I too had badly sprained one of my ankles after I had lowered myself down through the hole and landed badly on the giant pile of rubble directly under it.
Piece of cake!
Sure it was, Sierra commented grumpily as she took a seat on a large stone, breathing out in relief as the weight left her feet.
If that's true, why don't you put that left leg of yours on the ground and stand up straight?
Because if I stand like this,
I replied, indicating my current pose, and then waved the entire party ahead of me,
I can enjoy all of your misery at once, without having to turn my head.
Very funny, Lear, she commented, just as Alistair tapped her on the shoulder with a healing touch, causing her face to shift in relief.
Thanks, Alistair.
No problem.
Alistair said nonchalantly as he continued to work his way around the party, pausing briefly to lend a healing touch to those who needed it.
I'll send y'all my bill at the end of the day. Healthcare isn't free, you know.
Shh!
Constantine waved a hand in Alistair's direction. Healbots just worry about healing, not things like talking or getting paid.
Or healing rogues.
The priest replied, completely deadpan, while giving Constantine a meaningful stare, as a chorus of laughs echoed from the party.
Everyone ready to get moving again? I asked, finally able to put weight back on my injured foot as the last bits of pain faded away. This passageway here looks like it follows the tunnel we just left and is completely straight from what I can see. No more debris hopping for us.
Thank God for that,
Lazarus stated, taking an eager step forward as several people echoed the man's sentiments.
That, and it also happens to be our only way out of whatever this room once was,
Caius added, glancing around at what must have once been a substantially large chamber, but had been badly damaged, leaving it almost filled with rubble. Well, yeah, that too, I agreed, before turning around and motioning everyone to follow me as I set off down the passageway. Leaving the ruined chamber, I set a brisk pace as I led the group forward, mindful of the fact that Freya and her group were still ahead of us. Bounding up to my side before anyone else could, Amaranth joined me at the front of the group, his attention focused sharply forward.
This is a much better path to travel,
Amaranth told me barely a minute after we had resumed our journey, during which we made more forward progress than we had during the entire trek through the tunnel.
It is much easier on the paws.
No kidding, I replied to the cat, as I stepped over a large chunk of stone that had been forced through the floor of the passageway. Hopefully—
Wait!
Amaranth suddenly interrupted me, his body pausing mid-stride, forcing me and everyone else behind us to stop.
I hear something.
What's— Drace began to ask before I silenced him with a gesture, holding a hand to my lips and pointed at Amaranth.
What do you hear?
I queried my familiar, the cat having crouched down low to the ground and was now slowly stalking forward.
Shouting. It is Freya's voice,
Amaranth replied, taking several more steps down the passageway, his ears visibly twitching.
Along with what sounds like the thunder of magic. It is distant from us, but the noise carries well in here.
Shit, I cursed and glanced back towards the rest of the party, filling them in on what my familiar had just told me. We have trouble ahead. Amaranth can hear Freya shouting, along with magic, too.
Damn,
Trace replied, his expression tightening. Think they ran into that security unit? Either that or something else, I answered as I spun to race down the chamber ahead. We can't waste time. Let's go! Breaking into a sprint, we all rushed down the passageway, the sounds of our feet and rustling armor echoing loudly in the enclosed space. But as we drew closer to the conflict ahead, the noise that we were making was occasionally drowned out by the sound of crunching stone and several more loud shouts that I identified as belonging to Helix, Abaddon, and Thorn. I hope we're not too late, I thought desperately as the passageway that we were running down abruptly shifted to the left before immediately correcting itself, forcing us to shed some of our precious speed in order to keep our balance. Rounding the bend, I leaped over a pile of debris that littered the ground and pushed off the wall with my free hand, using it to both steady myself and regain some of my lost momentum. Continuing my sprint onwards, a bright flash of crimson light suddenly filled the far end of the passageway, which I now saw opened up into a vast chamber ahead. Hard in my throat, I put on a burst of speed, the passageway blurring past me as I ran, practically exploding into the room beyond.
And entering into chaos.
My first reaction after stepping out of the passageway was to boggle at the size of the chamber that we had just run into, my brain skipping a beat until I realized that we had just managed to rejoin the massive tunnel that we'd been following earlier. But instead of being filled with debris, this portion of the tunnel appeared as if it had been turned into magma and then allowed to cool, leaving the ground and walls covered in a layer of porous rock. Taking several steps forward into the cavernous room, another flash of crimson light filled my vision a second before a deafening explosion thundered through the air, followed by a pained shout. "That's Freya's voice!" I thought in a panic, recognizing the voice and immediately turning my head in its direction, only to have my eyes land on two brightly glowing shapes that belonged to a pair of ether crystals hovering in the air. Spinning awkwardly and off balance, both of the crystals appeared visibly damaged, with large burns crossing their otherwise translucent faces. But just as I was about to look away from the almost overpowering aura of magic in search of the noise that I'd heard, a large shadow stepped in front of one of the crystals. Wait. What the hell is that? Slowing down in shock, I gaped at the towering creature, realizing in an instant that it was easily twice my height despite the distance between us. Blinking to make sure that I wasn't imagining the sight before me, everything around me fell away as I took in its appearance. Made entirely out of a tarnished, dark metal I couldn't identify, the creature bore a bipedal shape, complete with two arms and two legs. In one of its arms, I could see the shadow of an incredibly long greatsword that had clearly been designed for a being of its stature. Its other hand was pointed straight ahead of itself, focused on something that I couldn't see, a wicked array of claws flashing in the azure light emanating from the ether crystals as it opened its palm and shifted its arm ever so slightly. Then it unleashed an intense blast of crimson energy.
Holy shit!
I gasped in surprise as the cavern flared brightly with a crimson light once more, the subsequent explosive blast causing me to first flinch mid-step, then stagger as my foot caught a protruding piece of rock.
What was that?
Amaranth's mental voice roared in my head, having effortlessly kept pace with me during our sprint.
A golem!
I shouted back at the cat as I worked to keep my balance, refusing to take my eyes off what I had mentally pegged as being metallic construct, its tag appearing in my vision. Nefarian Sentinel, Elite Boss, Level 16.
It survived after all, I grimaced,
feeling my stomach twist as I finished recovering from my stumble, glancing briefly at the ground to check for more obstacles, then back towards the Sentinel, only to see it begin to gradually turn in my direction, having sensed either my curse or our mad dash into the chamber.
How the hell do we even—
Lyrian!
Freya's voice interrupted my thoughts as she suddenly came into view, crouched down as low as she could possibly manage from behind a fused pile of igneous rock.
Get down! All of you, get down!
Not questioning the blonde warrior's words, I dropped down onto my knees and angled my slide towards Freya, seeing Amaranth vanish out of the corner of my eye as he leaped in the opposite direction away from me. The second that I came to a stop, another flash of crimson light filled the cavernous chamber, only this time it was much, much closer than it had ever been before. Stone shards slammed into me as the rock pile that I'd slid behind exploded from under the sentinel's attack, forcing me to shield my face from the flying projectiles. With barely enough time to process what had just happened, I felt Freya's iron grip grab onto my wrist and yank me forward.
Move!
She shouted, using her superior strength to practically drag me behind her as she abandoned her old hiding spot and desperately searched for another.
The moment that thing sees anything, it tries to blast it with its hand cannon, then comes to finish the job with its sword. Believe me, you don't want to get hit by it.
No kidding, I called back to Freya, struggling to regain my balance with her pulling on me as she led the two of us behind another pile of volcanic rock, then turned around to face me.
What the hell took you guys so long to get here?
Freya demanded, staring at me with a wide-eyed expression, rivulets of both blood and water visibly dripping from her hairline.
We've been here for ages playing hide-and-seek.
We came as quickly as we could, I replied defensively, despite knowing that anything I said would fall flat. Seeing the annoyed expression on her face, I attempted to shift the conversation, asking the first thing that came to mind.
Why are you soaking wet?
Because I fell into a fucking pool of water!
Freya snapped, shaking her head dismissively and causing a spray of droplets to fill the air.
That's not important right now. Right now, we need to figure out what the hell that thing is and how we're gonna kill it.
It's an Afarian security unit, I told Freya, wincing as yet another flare of crimson light flashed in the distance, followed by the familiar sound of exploding stone. Based on the sounds of moving feet, it seemed that the sentinel was moving away from our hiding spot, giving Freya and me a chance to quickly exchange notes.
I made contact with some sort of Nefarian security system in charge of this place, and it said that it was damaged and non-responsive. Does shooting exploding death beams look non-responsive?
Freya shouted back before shaking her head and dismissing the question.
Did the security system have any suggestions of how to deal with the stupid thing at least?
Nothing helpful, I answered, drawing Splinter from its sheath.
So it looks like we're back to the old, tried, tested, and true tactic that works when all else fails. Keep hitting it until it stops moving,
Freya finished, her face turning into a grimace.
I don't know, Lear. In order to do that, we're going to have to get in close.
I don't see another option here, Freya, I said impatiently. Either we risk getting chopped to pieces or turned to ash. Either way, the end result is going to be the same.
You're right,
Freya replied with a sigh, visibly deflating.
With all of you here now, we might just stand a chance.
Here's to hoping, I said dryly, taking a moment to cast lesser shielding on myself, hoping that if I did get hit, either by the sentinel's beam or its sword, that the slight boost to my armor and spell resistance would make a difference. Is there anything in here that could help us, maybe? I made contact with the security system upstairs. Maybe I can do the same here.
I don't think so, Lear.
Freya shook her head to the negative as she readied her spear, having been holding it in her free hand all this time.
The only thing I've seen in here so far were the same two monocrystals you just saw.
They look a little worse for wear, I said, remembering their burnt and scarred appearance.
Do you think we can use them for something?
Freya queried while twisting in place and peering over the mound of rock that we had taken cover behind.
In general, yeah, probably,
I answered, hearing the loud crunching steps of the sentinel slowly grow louder as it made its way around the room. But for this fight, no clue.
Let's just see if we can damage the thing first.
Okay, Freya said, letting out a short breath as she ducked back into cover.
It's coming this way anyway. Any plan of approach?
Give me a few seconds head start, I told the woman, gripping Splinter's hilt as I prepared myself to charge the Nefarian golem. I'll hopefully catch its attention and try to dodge one of its blasts while you and any others get in close.
Sounds good,
she stated with a nod, meeting my eyes with a grim expression.
See you out there.
Giving Freya what I hoped was a reassuring grin as I left, I forced myself up onto my feet before I could reconsider the action and rushed around the pile of fused stone that we'd been hiding behind, sending a quick mental message to Amaranth.
Gonna try charging the sentinel!
I warned my familiar, hoping that he had managed to escape the blast that I'd heard earlier, as I worked myself up into a sprint, already seeing the construct in the process of turning around to face me.
Is that wise?
Amaranth's voice came back, sounding unsurprised at my statement.
Probably not,
I admitted to the cat, but it's the least worst option we have right now. Shifting my attention away from Amaranth's mental sigh, I focused my attention back to the sentinel, seeing it complete its turn, my eyes being drawn towards a glowing light on its chest. Shaped like a massive breastplate, the first thing that I noticed was that the golem's midsection was covered in a thick layer of gray, crud-like filth, mixed with visible spots of rust and battle damage. Set into the center of its chest was a large crystalline sphere that glowed with a faint azure light, pulsing ever so slightly in sync with the sentinel's movements, almost as if it were some sort of magical heart. Drawing my gaze upwards to the construct's head, I found myself staring into an unrecognizable and partially melted visage, whatever little details that remained obscured by more of the crud-like substance that covered its chest. All that was visible on the sentinel's head was a single bright azure-hued eye that glowed brightly on the right side of its misshapen face.